Mormon Stories Podcast takes a ton of work and depends solely upon listener support. To keep this program alive, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org. So let's transition from what I'll characterize as you seeking truth, you caring deeply, and you being so committed to honesty that you felt like you had to leave the church because it wasn't what you claimed to be, claimed it was. It wasn't what it claimed to be.
Right.
Now, let's talk about your situation with your wife. You tried to tell her that it wasn't true, and what were the series of events that led to you getting divorced?
Well, as I recall, and of course this is 50 years ago, so my memory may be colored by,
sure,
by subsequent events. And I'm sure that if you talked to her, she would probably tell quite a different story. But as best as I recall, we did not discuss Mormonism at all. She did not want to talk about it. And so it was a non-subject. We continued to go to church. At least I continued to go to church for a while, as I said.
So you tried to talk to her, and she would just say, I won't talk to you.
Right.
I won't have this discussion.
I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear any of this.
And how did that make you feel?
I thought, well, okay, fine. You know, if you want to continue to believe it, that's fine. And I would continue to drive to church with them, I had no problem with her working in the church or doing anything with the church, going to church, anything like that. I began to, what I'm going to talk about now was, as I look back on it, probably a mistake. I began to realize, well, gee, there's no need for me to not have a cup of coffee with the kids at school, when they go and have a cup of coffee. I had never in my life tasted coffee, so I thought, well, no reason to not to try it. And when they'd have a little party, I would think, well, gee, there's no reason for me not to have a glass of wine or a beer anymore, because I don't believe that God considers it a sin.
This is why you were still a member and still married to a believer.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. Did I mishear you say earlier that you didn't try alcohol until after you had left the church?
Well, until after I had stopped believing.
Okay.
When I talk about leaving the church,
okay,
I'm talking about intellectually leaving.
Gotcha. Okay, so so you're, and that's,
I'm still officially a member of the church.
And this is such, you know, I counsel with couples all the time. The wife is a believer, the husband stops believing, immediately he wants to try beer or alcohol, mm-hmm, coffee, mm-hmm, and that is so disruptive to the believing spouse. And I feel split on that. Part of me feels like, look, you're committed to a marriage. You changed the terms of the marriage. Mm-hmm. You're the one who became the disbeliever. That wasn't the terms when you got married. Mm-hmm. You know that it's going to be troubling to your spouse to drink wine or coffee. Marriage is about making sacrifices. So, like, why push that button? Why not just pick your battles wisely? You've already stopped believing. That's traumatic enough. Leave the coffee and alcohol out of it so that you can at least save the marriage. That's how half of me feels. The other half, mm-hmm, of me feels like Jesus drank wine. The pioneers drank coffee. All members of the church drank coffee up until the early 1900s, or most of them. Mm-hmm. Who cares? You're no longer a believer. All the world drinks coffee, and to no real severe detriment. And alcohol, if used responsibly, is perfectly reasonable. I'm torn between those two. But can you respond to the first position? Because, you know, it's bad for a marriage to do things that your wife is really are really unsettling for your wife.
Yeah, and
Why not just
I
let
think
those
that's
go?
accurate.
Why not just let those go?
I think that's good advice. If you can do it that way, and probably if I had my wits about me, I would not have pushed that button. For example, I continue to wear my garments because I knew that would upset her if I stopped wearing the garments.
Right.
I tried. I remember one time bringing home a bottle of cold duck wine, which is I don't know if you know what that is. In those days, I don't see it anymore. But it's a red sparkling wine. It's kind of like champagne, but it's red. And I had been introduced to cold duck, so I brought home a bottle, and I suggested that, I forget, it was an anniversary or something. I suggested that maybe she'd like to try it a little bit and see that it really isn't all that bad. And I remember that we opened the bottle and we drank the bottle of wine together. And I thought, well, this is progress. We're moving along. You know, if I can get her to drink a bottle of wine, that was as far as it went, though. And oh, there was something there. I just lost a thought.
That would be traumatic and troubling, it seems, for a believer.
Well, I think she was trying to meet me halfway, I suppose.
Right.
What happened then was, she was very uncomfortable with the way things were going and felt she wanted to go home for the summer and take the kids and visit family back in Utah and Idaho. And so she did. And so I was on my own for the summer. I know what it was I was going to say. One of the problems with for a Mormon spouse in realizing that the former Mormon spouse no longer believes it is that the church has taught us to realize to believe that if you leave the church, if you stop believing, and that means you will no longer be obedient, you no longer observe the gospel because you don't believe it anymore. And so all the things that you've been doing because the gospel says to do them or not do them, are going to be tossed out. For example, the gospel teaches you to be faithful to your spouse. Well, if you don't believe, why would you be faithful to your spouse? The gospel teaches you not to steal. But if you don't believe, then it's okay to steal.
Right.
The gospel teaches you not to lie. But if you don't believe, then it's okay to lie.
Right.
And so on. And so all of the things that make for a good person, the church teaches you. And actually, Christianity does as well. Teaches you that you are a good person because you are a good Christian or a good Mormon. And if you're not a good Christian or a good Mormon, then you do all these bad things.
Right.
And so, that's what a Mormon spouse starts to think. Well, he doesn't believe anymore. That means he doesn't believe the covenants we made in the temple when we were sealed. Does that mean that he's going to come on to some pretty girl at school or at work? And I bet he will, because what's to keep him from doing
Well, those are natural questions.
that? Yeah,
I think they're even reasonable. Like,
they are
I can
natural
tell you
questions.
that in my darkest hour, when I wondered if I believed in God, and when I had decided that the church wasn't claims to be before I had reconstructed, the perspective that I have now. That's exactly what I thought. Why be loyal to my wife if she doesn't find out? Who cares if there's no God watching? So I mean, it's a natural thing for a disbeliever to start thinking and feeling, and it's a natural thing for the believer to fear on the part of the disbeliever. Now, both sides come by that honestly, but you can see how a believer would be terrified, and maybe even rightly so.
So I do understand that, and as I look back on what I was doing and not doing during those days that our marriage was on shaky ground, I realized that I could have done a great deal more to reassure her that I do still love you. I still am going to be faithful to you. I have no interest in getting involved with another woman. I have no interest in becoming a cheat or a liar. I'm still the very good person that you thought I was. The only difference is I'm being a good person for different reasons.
But you didn't say that to her.
I did not.
Why
I
did
did not in
why didn't
so many words. I think probably I didn't realize what a traumatic experience it was for her. I was an ignorant 25-year-old at the time. I wasn't as knowledgeable about human nature as I am in my wise old age.
was college it contributing to maybe you feeling becoming a little bit negligent in taking care of her needs and your family's needs because you were so caught up in these cool, smart friends and the cool, interesting things you were learning that, like, all of a sudden, now that you weren't believing, this believing Mormon spouse just didn't seem as interesting, didn't seem as compelling. Maybe I would rather have a woman who was more adventurous and intelligent, or at least more informed. Did any of that contribute as a dynamic to the failure of your marriage?
Well, as I say, my memory may be faulty and colored in my favor, but I don't recall that I ever had feelings or ideas like that. I continued to love my wife very much. I felt, in spite of the fact that she didn't want to talk about the church, I felt that she was a very bright woman. She was a loving mother. She was a good companion to me. I had no desire to, and I tried to be a devoted husband still.
And last question before we talk about the actual breakup. Did you ever start to feel one of two very common things? One is, my wife is an ostrich with her head in the sand. She's in denial. She's not being intelligent. She's not being rational. She's living in denial, and being willingly ignorant by being unwilling to talk about these things. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, I will not have my children raised in a cult or in a false church, and I will do everything I can to either deconvert my wife or prevent my children from being raised in something that's false, to be set up with the same disillusionment that I experienced.
The answer to both of those questions, I think, is no. I didn't consider her to be an ostrich with her head in the sand. I was perfectly willing for her to continue to be a good Mormon wife and mother. I don't re recall being upset that she didn't want to see things the same way I did. I would have been quite comfortable, I think, with her continuing to be a member of the church. And as far as the children goes, I was perfectly willing for them to continue to be Mormons as well. It's interesting that at the time, it didn't occur to me that the church was a cult, or that it was destructive. That didn't enter my mind.
I'll just highlight that as a slight difference from what I'm seeing to be very common. And maybe it's because of ex-Mormon websites that now exist that do frame the church in terms of being a cult. But it's very common for the disbelieving spouse to experience extreme angst about their children being raised in a church that they think is fraudulent. So I think it's different, your reaction, and to be willing to just go along and be semi-active and allow their spouse to be a believer and not feel like their spouse is inferior in some way for avoiding the truth and to let their kids be raised in it. That's not how people are feeling today.
Well, I think it all depends. I think that there are probably people today who are still people who are a no longer believing spouse who still feel that, oh no, that's okay for my kids to be raised Mormons, and if my wife wants to be continue to be Mormon, that's fine with me.
I'll just say
Because
those people don't come to talk to me very much. That's maybe I should just frame it that way.
okay, well, maybe that's because they're not suffering any problems from
Yeah, that's
it.
probably right. That's probably
Yeah,
totally right.
people come to you who've got problems
Right.
and are desperate and are trying to change things some way in some fundamental way.
All right, so I'm going to put a call out to my listeners. If there's any listener out there who's no longer a believer, but they're totally cool with their wife or spouse and kids being raised in the church, I want to interview you. So that's just a, I'll just pause that. Okay, let's go back then, Richard. How did things end up in a divorce for you?
Well, things got bad that first summer when she took the kids back to Utah for a while, and I was all by myself. And it was at that point I thought, well, gee, why am I going to spend this hot summer in Baltimore wearing garments? So I threw the garments away and went and bought some ordinary underwear while my wife was gone. And there were some kids, there were some fellow students in town during the summer. So we did some partying, and I learned that you can drink too much and it gets embarrassing. When she got back with the kids, it was a happy reunion. I remember we were very, very glad, all of us, to see each other again. And she was upset that I wasn't wearing garments anymore.
Yep.
But things seemed to be going on okay. It was sort of an armed truce for a while, and it wasn't until the spring, the last year we were in Baltimore, which was 1960, and she began talking in ways that were a little bit scary. I remember her telling me about how there was a friend of hers at church whose husband had left the church, and so one day she just hired movers while he was at work. Movers came in, emptied the house, and she took off, and he came home to an empty house and had no idea where she was. And said it almost like she told me about this almost like a threat, like this is what might happen. We had some angry discussions, partly because I would go to a party with other students, and she didn't want to go because there was going to be drinking, and I would come home, and I'd had some drinks, And I remember one night she locked me out of the house, and I had to climb in a window, and it was another example of how stupid I was, because she confronted me, and I said, "Why did you lock me out of the house?" She said, "You've been drinking." And I said, "You can't know that I've been drinking because I've been drinking vodka, and vodka can't be smelled on the breath," which, shows how stupid I was. Anyway, that was kind of things just got worse and
Did your
worse.
drinking ever
And
lead you to be violent at home or to,
no,
drink?
I don't think I ever struck her,
Or angry?
or got angry or anything like that. And as a matter of fact, I don't think I ever was drinking around her.
Or there were kids, right? Were there
I
kids?
didn't drink. I drink in. I didn't. Did not drink in the day. And or did, I don't think I ever drank around the kids.
So you did have children with her.
Well, yeah. We had three kids at that time. The oldest was I think 6 years old. I mean, we were a good Mormon family. We had kids bang, bang, bang. It was in April of that year that I came home one day, and she and the kids were not there.
We're not
And
there. We're not
they were
home.
not there. They were not home. And there was no note or anything saying where they were. So I thought, well, they're off doing something. And they didn't come home that night. And I thought, well, this is strange. I thought, well, she's probably took the kids and staying overnight at her friend's. They weren't there the next day, and yet the afternoon of that day, I knew our little girl had a doctor's appointment or an appointment of some kind. And so I called a friend and said, if Elaine is there with the kids, you need to remind her that Laura has an appointment this afternoon. And she said, "Well, Richard, Elaine isn't here." I said, "Well, do you know where she is?" She says, "Well, I took her to the train yesterday, and she's on her way to Utah." Well, I was really upset then because this was completely out of the blue. And I thought, and of course, I immediately thought of the woman whose husband came home to an empty house, which is sort of what had happened to me. And I thought, well, she's left me. And so I thought, who knows what she's going to do? So
I just have to ask. Do you feel like you were generally a good husband and a good father, aside from the fact that you stopped believing and you drank occasionally and stopped wearing your temple garments?
Yes, and again, my memory may be colored in my favor by, but I do think I was a good father. I think I've been a good father to the children I have now. I think I was a good husband and father, aside from the fact that I no longer believed, and that my wife didn't like my drinking, and she didn't like the fact that I no longer believed.
I mean, I know that, it's funny for me to ask you that 'cause I should be asking her, but that's the scenario that I think is most relevant here. People are going to get divorced. People are going to get divorced. 50% of marriages end in divorce apparently, but I'm interested in these issues where a spouse is a good spouse and a good parent, and the only real factor in the split up is an inability to believe the church for what I think are very reasonable reasons.
Well, I have always believed, at the time I believed it, and now and to this day I believe it. If I had not left the church, we would probably still be married.
Right. Okay. So you think, and even from the discussions you had with her around the divorce and subsequently, she never claimed that you were abusive, or she never claimed that you were, dishonest or angry or irresponsible.
Not to me, she didn't, and I'm not aware that she claimed that to anybody
Okay,
else.
all right, that's fine. So
But
how
John, you really might want to contact her and invite her to be on a podcast and let her tell the story about what it's like to be a Mormon and your spouse no longer believes. She might be able to give
You know what?
you
If she'll do the interview, I will do it.
well, I'll be glad to put you in touch
Okay,
with her.
let's do it. And the fact that you're offering that is, I think, to your credit in terms of credibility. But let me just ask, what's it like to be left?
Well, it was devastating, of course, and I think it was a major miscommunication between us because I interpreted her leaving as being an expression of her desire to leave me, and so I contacted an attorney to find out, gee, what are my legal rights? And he explained to me that under the circumstances, probably the best thing for me to do would be not to file for divorce, but under Maryland law, you could file for a legal separation, which would simply get a codification, a legal determination of the various rights in property and so on, and we had no property other than furniture and the car. But it would also establish custody and visitation rights. And so I said, well, go ahead and drop those papers and I'll send them out to Idaho and see what she'll do. It was, and I've learned since that it was probably a miscalculation because. I think that she probably did not intend to leave me, that this was a manipulative ploy, that she wanted to scare me into thinking that she would leave me, and that by doing so, I would come begging her at her feet to please do not leave me and come back. And I will do anything.
Why didn't you? Why didn't you do that?
Well, because it snowballed. As far as I was concerned, she was leaving me, and
Didn't you ever make an effort to beg her or plead her or
yes,
reconcile or?
I'm getting to
Oh,
that.
sorry.
No, that's all right. That's all right. So I was stuck there in Baltimore until the school term ended. And as soon as I was available, I think it was in June, I got on the train myself and went out to Idaho and went to her sister's where she had been staying with the kids in Idaho Falls. And I had phoned her and told her that I was going to come up and see the kids and say hello and see when we would talk. And I arrived at the sister's house, and the sister greeted me at the door saying, Richard, there's a man here who wants to talk to you. And it was a sheriff's deputy serving me with divorce papers.
And this is after you had
And
filed for separation, right?
right. But of course, the separation thing would only work if she had signed the papers and sent them back, which she did not. And I kept asking her, are you going to sign the papers?
So what about a phone call
Well, you
where
know, the phone calls, there were phone calls. And I said, do you want to sign the papers and get this settled? And she didn't want to talk about it. No, let's wait until you get out here and then we'll talk.
Okay, but what about a phone call just forgetting the separation or the divorce, but just like, honey, why did you leave? I love you. I love the kids. Can't we make this work? What's going on?
Yeah, that probably would have been a wise idea. I don't remember the actual text of any of the phone calls we had, You have to remember too that phone calls in those days were long distance calls and very expensive,
Oh, okay.
and I was a poor student.
Okay. That makes sense.
So it was not much more than letters.
What did you feel? Did you ever, was there a part of you that said, "Awesome, she's left. Now I don't have to feel this burden, and maybe I can find someone who's more like me and who I can get along with better." Like, was there?
No, I assumed that, or I was hoping that we could work this out some way.
Okay.
But when I was served with the divorce papers, I realized, oh boy, she really means this. And so there was not much talking between us then. Because she told me that she didn't want to talk except in the, with the presence of her attorney, which of course is what her attorney would have properly advised her to do. So we made an appointment for me to talk to her at her attorney's office in Idaho Falls. Her attorney happened to be a old former classmate of mine in high school. He was a couple of years ahead of me, but I knew him, and he was a good attorney. And so we met in her attorney's office, and he said to me, "Richard, is there anything that you'd be willing to do to put an end to this and get you two back together?" I said, "Yes, I would be willing to do almost anything." And he turned to Elaine and said, "Elaine, what would you have to have Richard do in order to for there to be a reconciliation and stop this divorce?" And she said, "He would have to come back to the church and be a good member of the church." And Dennis turned to me and said, "Well, Richard, are you willing to do that?" And it was at that point I realized that it was over, because I could not say that I could be a good Mormon and forget all that I knew about what I had learned and say that I believed something that I didn't believe. I remember having to say, "No, I don't think I can do that." And I think Dennis said, "Well, I guess that's it then."
What's that like to love your wife, love your children, and to feel like it's the church that hasn't been honest in its dealings with other people is the cause for your divorce?
Well, at that moment, it wasn't really the church that I felt was involved. It was her requiring me to be part of the church that was the problem.
But where did that requirement come from?
Well, it was from her being brought up to be a good Mormon,
Right,
of course.
from the church.
But you see, I didn't blame the church directly. It wasn't directly the church's fault in my mind, at least at that moment. That is, she could have short-circuited it. She could have said, "In spite of all of what the church has told me I must do, I love you so much that I will accept you, whether you believe it or not, as long as you're faithful to me and you're a good man." But you see, she couldn't do that.
She couldn't give you that.
She couldn't, no. And I understand why. The and now that I look back on it, I can see that it is, I mean, even though it's indirectly the fault of the church, it is the fault of the church. The church tells women that they need to have a priesthood holder in their home. And my oldest boy was only 5 years old. He had another 7 years to go before he'd even be a deacon.
Right.
But later, later, as you begin examining and you begin to hear other people's experiences with how the presence of the church in their life has caused this kind of disruption, later you begin to say, "Look, there is something wrong here, that the church is ultimately the cause of so much sorrow and breakup of what otherwise could have been healthy, warm, loving relationships."
And as much as I love the church and in enjoying my membership and in raising my family in it, that is horrible to me that in any instance where the church or religious belief breaks up an otherwise good marriage and separates a children from their parent for just religious reasons.
And for a long time, I felt that my experience was probably unusual. I didn't know of any other couples that had broken up because one of the spouses didn't believe. As a matter of fact, I was aware in my own extended family, I was aware of cousins and uncles and so on who obviously didn't really believe it because they rarely went to church. They had an occasional beer, but they were good men and they were still, they'd still drive the wife to church or they'd still go to a sacrament meeting when one of the kids was giving a talk. And I realized that they didn't believe it anymore. But they still had a marriage and they still had their family. And so I sort of felt that my situation in having lost my family was unusual. And it wasn't until I became more active, just, 12 or so years ago, after I had retired and long after I'd left the church and long after I had remarried and had kids from my present marriage, it wasn't until I got active and realized that there were other ex-Mormons out there and became more active in the ex-Mormon community that I began hearing stories that were very similar to mine. Until that point, I had felt that my leaving the church was just really primarily an intellectual problem. It could be dealt with rationally and intellectually. And then, as I became more active among other ex-Mormons and began reading the stories that they posted online and talking to them occasionally and meeting them at ex-Mormon get-togethers, and I would sit at my computer reading some of these stories about the abuse and the turmoil that these people went to, and I'd find tears coming streaming down my cheeks at reading these stories. And I thought, it isn't just an intellectual decision that the church isn't what it claims to be and that it's not telling the entire truth. There is evil there. Evil things are happening because of this. And I suppose that that continues to be one of my motivations in continuing to do what I do, because if you can prevent bad things from happening to people, as they may well do if they get involved with Mormonism, I think it's worth spending time doing that.
And that's why you can't, quote, leave the church alone, unquote.
That's right. I've this this common quote that Mormons use to deprecate those who leave and Don't leave it alone. It's discussed quite often among ex-Mormons. How do you respond to this? Well, and there are all kinds of explanations people have come up with, or analogies, really. Well, so you were able to get in the lifeboat and leave the sinking ship, and you don't think that you should help to try to get other people out of the water. Or you've got out of the burning house. Don't you think you should try to help some other people to get out as well? Or, you've avoided walking into the quicksand, or you've pulled yourself out of the quicksand. Don't you think you should post a sign saying, "Warning ahead, quicksand"?
And
And others have said, "Look, we'd leave the church alone if the church would leave us alone, and stop destroying our relationships. Stop begging us to come back. Stop bothering us. Stop trying to reactivate us. Stop saying bad things about us. Pull those 50,000 missionaries off the streets. Stop trying to and get more people involved."
Or at least if you do have missionaries on the street, teach your history and your doctrine honestly and openly so that people don't join the church and then learn all the craziness.
Right. Make them read the fine print.
Yeah. Actually, there is no fine print because it's just
That's right. But provide the fine print and tell them, please read the fine print.
so
Or,
that a black
or.
person knows what the church's position was on blacks before
Right.
they decide to join, instead of sneaking that on them after. And
Right.
so that a feminist who joins the church can know about the church's treatment of women or about polygamy before she makes the decision versus
Yes.
after.
Right, because it would save so much effort, because I hear frequently from recent converts that just do some natural what would be naturally expected reading. One woman I remember, she'd been in the church for 3 months, and she'd heard something about polygamy, and she thought, well, no, that can't be. And so she looked in her Doctrine and Covenants that the missionaries had given her, and she read section 132. She says, I'm out of here. They didn't tell me about that. Now, she may not have joined in the first place, but if the missionaries had done it right, or had used a different method, had been a little more upfront, had been allowed to be a little more upfront, they may have been able to ease that woman into the idea of accepting that, yeah, there may be certain circumstances when polygamy would be God's way, and it's all right.
But by hiding it or not being open about it, then people feel deceived into something, like they weren't treated honestly, basically.
Exactly, exactly. And then you get outrage.
Yeah, then you don't just have the problem of the polygamy, you have the problem of feeling lied to and deceived.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to provide feedback, please check us out at mormonstories.org. If you want to help keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider either making a financial contribution or spreading the word about this episode through your blog, Twitter account, Facebook page, family newsletter, or through your ward bulletin and ward newsletter. Just kidding about those last two. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. Check them out at claytonpixton.com or skypixton.com. That's Sky with an E, SKYE, pixton.com. Thank you.